I'm going to do a teaching that I've done a couple times, but there's been kind of a request. Let's pass these out. I don't have PowerPoint tonight, but let's take one of each of these three things. And this is on a topic that is a hot button for our church and for, I think, Christians in general. But I think it's good for us to get it on the books, talk about it, and give you again a sense, hopefully, of my heart on this area of dating and what my convictions are, things that I teach in this church. We've had a lot of new people come over the last year that may not have heard this. A lot of you, how many of you were at the conference and heard me talk on this? Okay, most of you. And who hasn't heard me talk on dating? Anybody hasn't heard my spiel on kind of Christian dating? Okay, well, that's cool. I'll just tell you this. Some of you aren't going to like what I'm going to say, and that's okay. It's not about you liking me or liking what I believe, but it is important that you understand what I believe and why I believe it, because it's going to affect our church. And again, I think there's even been some rumblings lately about this area in our church that's starting to rear its head again, and it'd be good just to kind of talk about what do we mean by, what standards do we have? You know, I don't know if any of you have experienced this, but in this church, you know, I've experienced this. I've had people tell me, so you guys at The Rock, you don't date, right? Anybody said that to you guys? Anybody mentioned that to you? I heard that you guys don't date. Is that true? Yeah. Well, I want to address that tonight. And hopefully we're taping this. I think we are. So we can have it on tape. But I want to give you an answer to that question. Give you an answer to, do you guys at The Rock, do you date? I heard you don't. And that's kind of weird. And that is kind of weird. And let's talk about that. And at the end, I'm going to give you a chance to ask questions. That's why you have the blank piece of paper. As you have questions throughout the night, I want you to be able to ask those in a way that, you know, keeps your identity. You don't have to shout an embarrassing question out or a question that you want to ask. You can write those down and we'll take those. What I'm going to do is have Josh and Krista come up on the stage because they just went through this a couple years ago. I thought it'd be good to hear their input as far as a panel, a discussion panel, answering some of the questions you might have. So feel free to jot your questions down. We'll take those at the end. I'll try to go through this quick since most of you have heard it. And then we'll have, I think the questions will be the most meaningful because there are some good questions and we need to discuss those. And just let me say again that the purpose of even why I feel like it's necessary, why is it necessary for me to keep preaching this, to keep this before people, to have everybody understand what we're doing and why we're on the same, to get on the same page, is so that we can be blessed as a church. I want you guys to be blessed. I want people in my churches to be blessed. I want the individuals, the people that are going to be heading toward marriage, to be blessed. And this is not a means to restrict you, and this is one of the points a little bit later, but I just want to say that now. And again, this is not, thus saith the Lord. Okay, does everybody hear me? Say it with me. Not thus saith the Lord. This is not thus saith the Lord. I mean, God has some things to say on relationships, I believe, and how we're to interact with one another, for sure. And we're going to look at those verses. But God does not say, thou shalt not date it. Okay? It's not, you won't find that in the Bible. I think there's principles that I'm going to share that I believe kind of lead us in a direction that may be different than the classic dating model. That's what I want to propose to you tonight. It's not thus saith the Lord. And it's not a chance to put people under the law. For instance, people that will come into our church dating, it's not our opportunity to make them feel bad, put them under the law. We love everybody. And this is a conviction I have as a pastor. My heart is this. I just want to have a high standard of moral purity in our church. If we don't, we're in trouble. That's my goal. I want to have a high standard. And when in doubt, I say raise the bar. That's my philosophy. Okay? So we'll look at this. And often what I've told people, and I'll say it again tonight, you know, I'm not necessarily into let's sit down and debate this, but if you have thoughts, I want to hear them. I mean, if you have a different viewpoint that can be substantiated scripturally, then, man, let's talk about it. I honestly want to talk about that. I'm not trying to cram this down people's throats. I don't want people to get that impression. And again, you may not like it, but I challenge you to listen to it. From the Colorado conference, I did get some feedback, some negative feedback. Not much. I think actually just one kind of email that the person was quite upset. Obviously, they were in a dating relationship at the time at the conference and had some words to say to me, and they'd gone back kind of in a huff to their... They didn't go to our church. They were dating somebody in one of the churches. They went back to their youth pastor, their senior pastor, kind of huffed about what I said, got completely affirmed by their pastors that I was totally blatantly in the wrong. So she wrote me in the email in that spirit. And I just wrote her back and said, I appreciate what you said, and I appreciate, I don't want you to feel condemned. I don't want you to feel that. But please substantiate what you're saying. If you say it's okay to do what you're doing, and I'm not saying it's not okay, as long as you're morally pure, then, you can do what you want. But please tell me where I was wrong scripturally. Please, because she said that. She said, you were taking those scriptures out of context, and on and on. And I just wrote back and said, please send me, explain that to me, and show me verses that support what you're doing. And she never wrote back. And honestly, I was very kind in my response. I affirmed her, told her I appreciated her having the guts to even write me. But just, I want to understand. Show me some verses that prove your point, that prove that your relationship is righteous and holy in God's sight, and that God affirms what you're doing. And she never wrote back. And I've had other people tell me that too. They've got verses, but I've never heard anybody that has given me a verse. Not one. Now, maybe there are. Maybe you have some. I'd love to hear them. Put them on the piece of paper. Say, what about this verse? Let's talk about it, okay? Let's talk about it. But I want to kind of squelch the rumblings, especially in our church. Let's get rid of it, and let's hear my heart, and hopefully this will help all of us. Help us all. Okay? So I've got you've got your handouts. This sheet has a lot of the verses that I've just got written on the sheet. We won't go over all of them, but they're there kind of for our reference. I'll leave it here for quick reference. I think I'll just put this here for now and use the sheet. Okay. I thought it'd be good first to, because I talk about the classic dating model. I thought it would be good to define that in my mind. When I'm talking about the classic dating model, and I dated a lot all the way through high school into college, this is what I mean by the classic dating model. This is what I believe when I think of the classic dating model as a definition. What the classic dating model is often marked by, how I define it, these things are typically or often found in this model. First one is this: separation, tendency to become excessively exclusive at the expense of other key relationships. This is oftentimes what I find in classic dating model. Okay? And again, I'm not just saying that this is all wrong. I'm just saying this is what I see, and I'm going to contrast it to maybe there's another way. That's the only reason I'm going to set this up this way. Maybe there's a better way. Maybe God has something to say about our relationships. Separation. I think it's also marked by, often, not always, but often marked by isolation, which means that I see it, and I've experienced this in my own life, typically pursued with little or no input or accountability from other mature Christian leaders. The people will go off and have their own relationship and do the things they want to do with little or no, or actually disregarding input from other leaders. That's often what I see in Christian classic dating, when Christians are involved in the classic dating. Number three, I often see classic dating, the way I would define it, with deception. And deception is not malicious in this sense, it's just deceived. There's deceit going on, which means there's little or no thought or communication in regard to the vision, plan, purpose, or long-term commitment for the relationship. Meaning, if you'd ask that person, why are you dating? Why are you doing what you're doing? They wouldn't have a good answer. There's not a commitment. There's not a firm commitment to the other person that can be communicated and verbalized or has been between the two people. They might say, we just have a lot of things in common. We just kind of like hanging around each other. And again, that's not wrong. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying this is what I see, though. And I'm going to contrast that to what I would say might be a better way. But there's no real commitment. There's no verbal commitment long term. I'm committed to you for the purpose of hardly anything, let alone marriage. We're just kind of hanging around. We like each other. We enjoy. I just like being around another person. I like having a girlfriend, boyfriend. We have the same interests. We work together. We whatever. But there's little or no thought or communication in regard to vision, purpose, plan, or long-term commitment for the relationship. That's what I see. Number three, corruption. Often leads to lowering of the basic biblical moral standards. Again, this isn't always, but I see it happening in what I would consider classic dating. which is inevitable if you spend lots of time by yourself, especially at night, which we'll get into later. That's inevitably going to happen. There's a lowering of the standard that maybe they even agreed with for a while, but then they drop their standard and say, now let's just go for it. So those four things. When I think of classic dating, when I say classic dating, that's what I see, what is typically in there that is not good. There's good things. There's obviously good things in classic dating. There's relationships that build. There's love. There's things like that. But these are the things that I'm going to contrast to. Maybe we can deal with some of these issues as Christians from the Bible. Could there be a better way? Could there be a better way? Again, I've dated a lot, had a lot of relationships. Kissed my first girlfriend in fifth grade, Tracy Shipler, on the playground. We were leaning against the wall, and we had a bunch of our friends around us just kind of egging us on, kiss her, kiss her, kiss her. And I put my arm around her, and I kissed her on the cheek, fifth grade. She was my first long-term girlfriend. I had a girlfriend. I never didn't have a girlfriend from that point on all the way up till when I was in college. Even after I got saved for about a year, I had a pretty steady girlfriend. And so I'm familiar with the process and how it happens and why it happens. Could there be a better way? I've seen a better way as a Christian. I've seen a better way modeled. I've seen a heritage. I've been around people that have modeled what I'm going to talk about here in a little bit. I've seen it work. The Bible says that we're to imitate our leaders when we see the outcome of their way of life, imitate their faith. And this issue, this area takes a lot of faith, doesn't it? This area of being pure in your relationships, it takes a lot of faith. Because our tendency, our flesh, you know, God has put us to be attracted to one another. It's hard to resist. It's hard to resist that. Maybe when God maybe says, wait a little bit, it's hard to resist that. But I've seen people do it. People have gone before me and helped me. You guys want to answer that? Whoever has that cell phone. So I've seen that, and I want to pass it on to you. 2 Timothy 2, it's on your sheet. It says that you need to pass on those things to people. Faithful people will pass them on to others, so I'm going to pass it on to you. And hopefully we'll have a good understanding here. It works and pleases God. I believe that's true. I believe what I'm going to share works. I've seen it work. Josh and Chris are another good example of how it does work. I've seen a lot of people, and you guys don't know these people, but I know people. I look at marriages, I look at people's lives who have modeled what I'm going to talk about, and I tell you what, it works. And it brings blessing. You know, in the Great Commission movement, which is now 30 years old and has churches all over the world, you know, a lot of these principles, where I learn them, are being put in place. The principles of what I'm going to call dating with a purpose, as opposed to just dating. Dating with a purpose, these principles have been put in place for a lot of years by a lot of people. And I want to tell you something. We have, trying to think of the exact stats, but 25,000 people now in our movement and 90 churches, a whole bunch overseas. And we've got a lot of people in our churches, a lot of people that have come in single. We had our church started out as a college movement, so we had a lot of singles get married in our movement. You know, if these principles didn't work, then we'd have a lot of old singles. Just that's all we would be. But you know what? We have a lot of people who have great marriages and lots of kids. And so something's happening to get them married, and they've applied these principles. And I want to tell you something. What's the stat on marriage and divorce these days? What's the basic common thought on divorce? How many people get divorced? Yeah, 50% is a number. Could somebody get me some water, please? That would be really nice. You got your old germs all over it? Not that your germs are bad, but you know, I just don't like the idea of it. Thank you. I think I'm good, Steele. Thanks. Yeah. Gotcha. In the Great Commission movement, in our movement, the movement of churches that we're in, if you were to calculate, if you were to do a study and find out how many divorces there have been in our movement of people that were brought into our movement, the people that were discipled in our movement, not people that kind of floated from one church to another but people that would embrace these things I'm going to share with you. People that would say, I'm a Great Commission churchgoer. I was kind of raised up and discipled, and I'm a part of this movement, and I'm going to apply these things that my teachers, my leaders are teaching me. Within the Great Commission movement, over the last 30 years, of all the marriages of the tens of thousands of people, in our movement of people that have been committed to these principles, talking to other leaders. As a matter of fact, I called Neva Whitney. I called Neva last year when I was thinking about this. I said, Neva, you probably know marriages in this movement. Your husband leads the movement, helps lead it. How many divorces would you say of this type of person have we had in our movement? Most stats show 1 out of 2. So we should have had 5,000, 10,000 divorces, maybe. I don't know. A lot. And I had a number in my head. She thought for a minute. She said, people have gotten divorced that have been part of our movement. She said, I can only think of 5 couples that have gotten divorced. And I said, Neva, that's all I could think of, too, out of our whole movement. Now, there may be more that I don't know about, but as far as somebody that really knows the movement well, grew up in it, Neva, and myself, and I talked to John Meyer, and he concurred that probably less than 10 that we know of. There have been some, and they've been heartbreaking for our whole movement. I could list them. I mean, that's how many there's been. I could list the people who have gotten divorced. Now, I look at that. I don't know about you, but I look at that, and I go, you know what? Maybe there's a better way. Maybe I should listen to this rather than just rear my head and say, this isn't right. We got to be able to dig it up. This is so restrictive. This is under the... Why don't we just listen and go, maybe there could be some good out of this. Maybe I could learn something. And again, if you have my heart, I just want to help you. I want to bless you. Good has come out of these families that haven't gotten divorced. God has brought good into their lives. And I would propose to you that maybe good could come into your life. God's plan for the church, real quick, is to be holy. Have you got the blank so far? Classic dating. Could there be a better way? Inheritance. This is my heritage, sorry. It works and pleases God, and I want to bless and not restrict. Is that all of them? Are we caught up? 3 is I want to bless, not to restrict, meaning this is not thus saith the Lord. And this is not to put people under the law that come into our churches dating or choose to date once they're in our churches. It's not the point. We're not going to make people feel bad. If they feel pressure because there's a lot of people around them that aren't dating, well, that's tough in one sense. I mean, I feel for people that way, but you know what? If we're going to hold a standard up here and people in the church hold a standard and say, you know, this is what I'm going to follow, and we don't condemn people, we're not talking bad about people, we're not looking down on them, but we choose to do it this way and people feel a subtle pressure, well, that's going to happen. I mean, you can't avoid that. You can't avoid it. But we shouldn't do that on purpose. We shouldn't make people feel bad. That's for sure. Okay. God's plan for the church. He wants holiness. We're to be set apart. That's what holiness means. Who knows their holiness outreach verse? Yeah, that was almost in unison. What verse is that? 1 Peter 1:16. Be holy, because I am holy. God wants us to be set apart from the world. So it shouldn't surprise us if, you know, so this argument won't work very well with me, but all the other churches do it. Everybody else dates the classic model. Everybody else does it. The world does it. So it's kind of weird that we don't. Well, that's not going to hold water for me because God says you're to be holy. You're to be set apart. We're to be different. What makes us different? Well, if we're not different morally and have a higher standard in our relationships, then what makes us different? I'm not into lowering our standards so we can look like the world. That's not what I'm into. Especially in this area where so much bad can happen. So much bad can come into people's lives. So much hurt, so much pain. It can have a very negative effect on the church if it's not done correctly, if it's not held to a high standard. Okay? 1 Corinthians 13, we know it, but this says, love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it is not rude, it is not self-seeking. Love does not seek its own. It's not easily angered. It keeps no records of wrong. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. So, again, people say, well, if I love them, I should be able to just kind of, you know, I should be able to do what I want. And I say, well, love is not self-seeking. Love is not self-seeking. God wants us to be set apart. We should have true love. Jesus said, if you love me, you'll obey my commands. That's true love. Goal, what people need is to feel valued for more than what they have to offer. And again, in most classic dating, a lot of classic datings, I don't want to overstate it, but at least the ones I've been involved in, the only people I was interested in dating were people that had something to offer me, if we're just going to be deadpan honest here, okay? I was only interested in the ones that were I was attracted to, that I could get something from eventually. And that was before I was a Christian, although I did date after I was a Christian. But oftentimes, I see that's what dating is all about. It's what I can get. It's very selfish, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Not always, but oftentimes it is. If people are genuinely honest, it's we're looking for sex. We're looking for affection. We're looking for somebody to give us something. And again, that's not necessarily bad, because God has created us to desire that. That is right and true and noble and good in the proper context. When we take it outside of that context, it's like anything else. It's like sex. You know, sex is beautiful and wonderful inside of marriage. But outside of that, we all know God says it's wrong and it's bad and it brings bad things into your life. And I think this classic dating model is one of those things that's outside the realm of what God says is good when it's done in the way we talked about earlier. You know, God wants equality within the church. In 1 Corinthians 12, it talks about that, how some things in the church are honorable, and they don't need much more recognition, they don't need much more attention, but some are dishonorable, and we're to treat them with special honor. And not to be out of context, but what I'm thinking here is, in my recollection, after I became a Christian, started buying into some of these principles, some of these ideas, I stopped classic dating, and I just said, God, you're going to bring me my wife. I'm not going to pursue my wife anymore. I'm not going to pursue women anymore. I'm going to let you bring me my wife. Once I stepped back and started hanging around guys more than girls, I started noticing something. You know who I was attracted to, who really attracted me? Up till 21 years before that, the ones that attracted me were the beautiful ones, the ones that were, you know, hot and sexy and could make me look good if I had her on my arm. Those are the ones I was attracted to. But there came a point where all of a sudden, you know who attracted me? It was the women who were godly and were pursuing God. And they weren't necessarily the most beautiful physically. Most of the time they weren't. I mean, I would even catch myself thinking, what am I thinking? But I would see this woman who was paying attention to the less noble. I mean, I'd go to a meeting and I'd watch and I could see that the godly women weren't talking to me. And that kind of ticked me off a little bit because they wouldn't come pay attention to me. Like in the world, you know, I could have girls pay attention to me. I knew how to do that. I knew how to play that game. But in the church setting, when we have meetings, and at that point we had up to 500 college students at Iowa State in our student group, and there's a lot of beautiful women, but the ones that I would notice are the ones that are talking to that new person, that really overweight person that, you know, in my mind I would just kind of, I'm not going to talk to her. These godly women would go talk to them rather than me, or even their friends, they would pay attention. And I saw that over time. You know what? That became very, very attractive to me. Because what I was looking at was, there's a woman who's serving God. She's not playing the game. She's loving on God. And that, I want to tell you something, women. There's nothing more attractive to a man than that, a godly man than that, than a woman who's pursuing God and not pursuing them. You know, that may be fun for a while. We like that, guys, we kind of like that, don't we, for a while, when the women pay attention to us and we can kind of tell that we're kind of the big man on campus, and they kind of, you know, we like that for a while. But you know what? Pretty soon, in my mind anyway, I start to disrespect women that do that to me. And I start looking around for the women that have an eye on God and an eye on the unlovely. The ones that are taking care of the unlovely. They're loving on the people that the world wouldn't love on. That is attractive to me. Maybe not to everybody, but I want to tell you, I know a lot of godly men that would say, that's right. That's what's attractive to me too, is people that love God. My wife saw a thing it was so good. It was on the news, I think, but it was a picture of this old woman. Maybe it was at the women's conference. She showed the picture of the old woman reading her Bible, and Kathleen said, "This is what I want to be like." What a great picture! What a great thought! Is that I don't care how beautiful that girl was when she was 20. We're all going to end up like that eventually. You can't hold on to it forever. You look at the old movie stars. It's kind of shocking, isn't it? Because there comes a point where they can't pull it up or tighten it up anymore, and you haven't seen them for 2 years, and all of a sudden you see them at an event, and you go, oh my goodness, because it all just kind of blew. And they used to, I mean, look at Elizabeth Taylor. Look at pictures of her when she's 18, 19, 20. Oh my. But I want to tell you, I look at her now, and she looks-wise, I don't know about her character, but just looks-wise, in the flash, you go, oh, it's all gone. She's really trying to hold on to it, but it's all gone. The point is, it says in Proverbs 31 that charm is deceitful and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord, she's to be praised. That's who you want, guys. And women, that's the kind of women you want to be. God wants equality within the church. Next point. Selfishness, I believe, destroys God's plan for the church. It destroys God's plan for the church. In Philippians 2, it says, "Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself." It's a strong verse. Selfishness destroys the plan of God. Partiality divides a family. Partiality. I'm just throwing out some words here we're going to look at in a second. It divides a family. When we show partiality, and that just means the quality of relating to the part rather than the whole. Partiality. Taking part of the group, taking just one person off, and you and them are kind of a couple. You're kind of a thing. That's partiality. That's the classic definition of partiality. Quality of or relating to a part rather than the whole. That's partiality. And it divides families. I mean, one of the worst things I can do with my children is to show partiality to them. Anybody had siblings that were favored above you? Your parents kind of showed them a little bit more favor. Anybody want to admit that that was true in your family? You sense that at different times? Yeah, and it hurts when parents show partiality. And in the church, it hurts. And it divides when that happens. People feel left out. You know, in the world, this often happens. If you're not pretty enough, if you're not smart enough, if you're not handsome enough, you will be left out in the social circles. You'll be left out. And I want to tell you, when leaders fall into this, and there's a lot of leaders here tonight, when leaders fall into this type of partial, selfish dividing, meaning that leaders are showing attention to the smartest, the most beautiful, and they're playing these games, then the whole church is affected. It just trickles down to the whole church. And I've seen lots of student groups at Iowa State. And when I was there working with the different student groups, I've seen it just infiltrate through the whole ranks of their whole student group, where their whole meetings like this are just meat markets. That's all it is. They're not listening. They're playing games. They're all dolled up. You can see them just looking around. They're kind of giggling, looking for who. You know, there's guys over here and the girls over here, and they're kind of playing that game, and they're sitting next to each other, and that's all they're thinking about is each other. How can they pair up? How can I get him to look at me? How can I get her to look at me, and let's be a thing? And it divides. And it keeps us from accomplishing God's will, I think. Keeps us from being as effective as we could. Next point. Showing partiality and favoritism, in my mind, this is my theory, is selfish. It is selfish. Favoritism, definition, the showing of special favor. You're showing special favor to one person over another. And again, we talked about that separation in classic dating tendency to become excessively exclusive at the expense of other key relationships. Now, I just want to touch on that again, the favoritism. Because we're going to talk about it. Well, how do we get together then? How am I ever going to get married? Because I know that's the question you're thinking about. People will come to me at times and say, you know, I'm kind of attracted to so-and-so, and she's kind of attracted to me. I've even had people come together as a couple and say, all of a sudden, we're an item. And what do we do about it? And I'll just say, you know, one of the first things I'll tell them is, well, just make sure, if you're going to do this in a godly way, if that's what you're asking me, how can you do this in a godly way, make sure that your friends aren't going, ugh, those guys, they make me sick. Look at those guys. They never hang around me anymore. They're being jerks. I tell them, if your friends start saying that, then you're off base. You're off base because you're showing favoritism. That's a good sign. If your friends think that you're spending way too much time with that other person and you've ignored all your other friends, that's a good first sign that you're heading down the wrong road as far as favoritism. Showing special favor or relating to a part rather than the whole. You can do it all. You can love somebody and you can date them and still be a part of the whole. But once you start just isolating yourself and all your friends are going, forget them, you know, we don't know them anymore. They're on their own, then that's not a good sign. Okay. Again, the games Christians play, I've seen them, you've seen them. I think a good rule of thumb is, I'm just going to go through some of this stuff. They may, we may not. I think it's a good rule of thumb when it comes to this area of classic Christian dating versus what we're going to talk about. They may, we may not. And that's fine. If people don't like it, it's unfortunate. If people get turned off that we have a different way of doing things, then that's unfortunate. But sometimes Jesus did things that people didn't appreciate. They didn't like the way he talked. And one time the Pharisees came through and said, he's talking about us. You're offending us. They told him, you're offending us. You're talking about us. And Jesus said, oh, I'm sorry. I'll just lower the standard from what I just said to make you feel better about yourself and what you're doing. No. You know, if we feel like biblically that we have somewhat of a foundation to stand on, then we should stand on it graciously and kindly toward other people. not in a way of putting them down, but in a gracious way, saying, you know, this is our standard, this is my standard. They may, we may not. Okay. The classic dating is also based on selfishness. What I read to you, I think that's its foundation is selfishness when it comes right down to it. Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, it's what can I get? What can I get? Both people might be thinking that, but it's totally based on selfishness. As opposed to having a vision, a long-term plan, purpose to honor God with your relationship. classic dating is based on selfishness. That's my theory. That what I read to you, that definition is based on selfishness, which we just read is not good. Let's go into God's standards are pretty high. Have I missed any blanks yet? Because I know some of you guys are going to get really irritated. Got them all? Yes? No? God's standards are pretty high. Let's read these verses. We're going to read these next 4 points. You have your, you might not be able to read it on your sheet, it's so small, but go to God's standards section. Where is that at? God's, huh? Purity. Yeah. Yeah, there it is. Purity, number 3. Absolute purity is the first point. God's standards are pretty high. Absolute purity is what he calls for. It says in 1 Timothy 5, do not rebuke an older man harshly, but exhort him as if he were your father. Treat younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, and younger women as sisters with absolute purity.